Okay, well, cool. It's nooner. So, well, in Texas here. So, shall we?
That's
Isn't
all that
it?
matters.
Yeah, Texas Standard Time is the most
Right.
important time of all the times.
Noon prime, I think they call
Awesome. All right, here we go. Shop Talk
Shop Talk
Show.
Show.
Intro is just so absolutely rocking. It's super rock town. I cut it out a little early because we got so much to talk about. Welcome to episode 9 of Shop Talk Show, a podcast where we talk shop about web design and development and all the stuff you're probably doing right now. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me, as usual, is Chris Coyer. Chris?
Hi, the peeps.
And we have a very special guest, Ethan Marcotte, the author, purveyor,
Chauffeur into a new age of web design.
yes, the guide on our mothership of fluid gridding. Ethan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Wow, it's a damned honor to here, further than I am. So, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, so we get a lot of questions about responsive web design stuff, and I had a little. We have a little markdown files in there where we prepare for the show, and I was like, I'm just going to make one called Ethan.markdown, and I'm just going to put all the responsive ones in there. So, I'm trying to talk past you here, but I thought while we have the man here, let's talk responsive design. I hope that's okay with you.
Yeah, I'm kind of into it, so let's do
Yes. Okay,
it.
that's what we're gonna get in a minute. We have a few. I wonder if Dave has anything to start with.
Oh, yeah, well, my wife and I, we've been watching Star Trek: The Next Generation,
Oh, yeah.
and we've been watching this. We really enjoy it, but did you know the crew of the Enterprise is often confounded by HTML all throughout the series.
Is that a fact?
Yeah,
really, Dave?
there's one element in particular that tends to confound them. Do you guys know what it is? It's Q, the Q element.
Old me is crying. Oh.
Oh,
What's hey, ba-doom, ba-doom.
Oh, wait, I totally, oh, I failed on the rim shot.
Better than never.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was, well, so that joke takes, it's a kind of I doubled down on the nerd, and it takes a lot of Star Trek knowledge and HTML obscure element knowledge. So, yeah. Do you guys use the Q element at all? Is
It used to be like an inline quote, or am I totally off on that?
Inline quotes, yeah. I don't think I've ever used it outside of my blog, and that's, where I reserve all my sad markup nerdery for. So, yeah. Big fan. Big fan.
Yeah, that is a good one. Can you cite a Q? I bet you can,
I
right? Why
believe you
not?
can cite a Q.
Because cites are inline too. Okay, enough.
Well,
Well, we have a couple of things that are pretty interesting that happened in news that we're going to scoot through before we get into Q&A really quick. One of them I put in there because I thought it was interesting was this thing called style.co, jacobrask.github.com/style.co. I'll throw it in the chat room, but I'll also put it in the show notes, obviously. And it's kind of the reason I was into it is because I'm working on some design pattern stuff for SurveyMonkey, and it's kind of a tool to help with documenting your CSS in like a visual way, so you can like write comments in your CSS and then run kind of something or another, and it generates this like it'll show you the HTML element that it's styling an example of one next to the actual CSS, and it kind of lines them up. next to each other so you can see it. Just kind of, I don't know. I mean, it would have to, you would change the way you work a bit because you have to style things in your CSS according to this way to do it. But I was like, if you actually did it, it would, you know, I could see it being a useful automated style guide. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it looked cool. It's got that split layout where one side is all code and one side is all kind of text, that, and so you can line up your documentation kind of in parallel, explain what one hunk of code is doing and why. And I don't think there's enough of that in CSS in general. We don't really document our CSS. So.
Shame on you.
Yeah, I think there's something problematic about you, Dave.
Darn it.
That's crazy, though. I never heard about that style doco thing. I'll have to check that out.
Have you seen Adobe Shadow, Ethan?
Yeah, I have seen it, and it is pretty darn cool, I have to say. I mean, it looks like it's an early release. I've been tinkering a little bit with the beta before they sort of came out with it, and it's there have been a bunch of tools out, like Shim, I think, was one of the first ones. Drive-In that Scott Gell kind of ported to PHP in a stupid amount, like little JavaScript hack that was kind of brilliant. But yeah,
I didn't even watch the video.
So it's basically just a simple way to kind of broadcast URL at multiple devices. It's also great for remote debugging and DOM inspection. So it's just a much easier way to kind of keep from having to manually enter URLs and all these fantastic little devices that we're testing on these days.
All right. So if you literally have three or four of them in front of you or more, you can just go blah.
Yeah, so you can kind of keep them in sync. Like I said, there were a couple others that were out there, like Shim and Drive.
Yeah.
Job really well, but they required, like, get your own node server and, things I don't really understand. So it's second UI, and it looks like it'll be kind of a neat little application. So, yeah.
Sweet. I think I signed up at South by Southwest, which is this week, tomorrow, sweet, to have Adobe, like, show me something cool. And I have a feeling it's this, you know? I'm like, oh, that's not cool anymore. You already shared it.
They might have more cool.
Maybe. No, I'm going to go. All right, what else do we got, Dave?
Oh, well, just, you know, Sencha Touch 2 came out, or they got a new version, and it's pretty awesome. It's worth mentioning to check out. It looks hot. I don't really use much Sencha, but it looks pretty. It's really pretty, I guess, is what I want to say. So if you do a lot of Sencha development, you should, you're probably on that tip already. But if you're looking for, like, a mobile thing, then you can do that. So anyway, yeah. Another one is that the second part of last week's crossover episode with the Non-Bricking Space podcast is now up on the internet. So head on over to nonbreakingspace.tv, I believe it is, and tune in to our crossover episode. We talked a lot about preprocessors and Git. Is that right, Chris?
We basically, the whole hour, we gobbled up with that. But it was fun. So, yeah, thanks for having us, guys. And it was fun to have you guys. So, sweet. And then, I was on. There's a new one, you know, Drew Wilson, who does Pictos and stuff and a bunch of other stuff. He's all over the place. And then Jared and Edward Kobiak, who's on 5x5. He does, like, Founders Cast, and he does a couple other podcasts. A nice guy. Those three guys have this new blog and with some guys and podcast called The Industry. So it's theindustry.cc, and I was on their second podcast as well, which we talked about all different kinds of stuff. It's a really nice looking blog and website and stuff. Just a shout out to them. Go check it out. All right, we have a little bit of hot drama, and then we're going to get into the Q&A part of the show.
Yeah, we just have a little bit. So a while back, there was a bit of a stink up on Twitter about the Responsive Summit. And we don't have to go into depth, but Ethan, did you want to comment on this? You can say no. I just feel my reportive duty. I have to bring up hot drama.
Yeah. No, I'm more than happy to tell you guys. I know very little about the drum or otherwise. So the Responsive Summit was something that was organized by Josh Brewer and a couple other people, just kind of on a really short term impromptu basis. Josh was going to be in London and like out a quick email saying like, hey, let's chat about responsive design. You know, just a bunch of people that he knew, a bunch of friends, a bunch of folks in the industry in London. And I was totally like off email for 2 weeks when this was all happening. So I got back to, hey, we're going to have this thing. Hey, it's got a title. Hey, Twitter hates us. Hey, it was awesome. You know, we had this day long workshop discussion. It went like Mark Bolton, Elliot J. Stocks, a couple folks from Clear Left, some guys from the BBC who were working on that Responsive News project. And, you know, they just basically wrote up a bunch of really great things about how responsive designs kind of affected their workflow, you know, talking a little bit about how they've been kind of incorporated into practice. And yeah, so it's there was a kerfuffle on Twitter about people that sort of heard about this thing that had some in the title, and you know, people got a little, I guess, tweaked about, you know, exclusivity and not being invited. And it was, Josh and some of the other guys were saying, like, it was just kind of a fun title. You know, there wasn't really anything kind of meant by it. But, you know, that's from the guy who basically got a bunch of emails about this after 3 weeks of absence. That's my best recollection of what happened. It sounded like it was just kind of a silly title for something that had really good intentions and was actually a pretty awesome event, but wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a velvet rope kind of situation. So,
sure. Yeah. Okay. That's cool. I didn't know anything about it either. That was my first foray into it, but there should be more. Don't you think there should be, maybe there should be a whole conference about it someday.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't even hinting at anything there. I don't know.
Call me after. No, that was, yeah, it was like a, just a meetup thing, but yeah, I think.
Oh, right.
No. Cool.
All right, we got it. We're going to start the Q&A with what we like to call a little bit of a softball here in the journalism game.
Here we go.
My question for Shop Top is, what is responsive design? I've been hearing a lot about it. I'm not very familiar with it.
Okay, and that was from Angel Velasquez. So I'm gonna
let's just define it so we can so the rest of the show has some framework to talk.
Nice. I was hoping you guys could tell me actually, but yeah.
Oh, I got this.
Bring it on, Dave.
No, go ahead, Ethan.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess kind of on two levels. Like I mean, like when I wrote this article back in, what, 2010 or something, you know, a responsive design is really kind of like three different ingredients. It has a flexible grid-based foundation with images and media that work inside that like flexible context, and then media queries from CSS3 to allow us to figure out how that flexible layout can kind of re-articulate itself, like respond basically to the changing size of a browser window, a changing device screen, or different size viewport. But like just more generally, I think responsive design is a little bit about like just taking a more device and platform neutral approach to designing for the web, just thinking more flexibly by default. So rather than, you know, kind of continuing down this road of, you know, thinking about only designing device specific experiences, like mobile versus tablet versus desktop, or only targeting certain screen widths, We've got the technology and hopefully the design thinking to, you know, think more flexibly by default. So that was my buzzwordy response to the question. It was a fantastic.
So it's okay. So if you're really nailing it with responsive design, your design is fluid in context. The media within fluid design is fluid as well, and you're just in general, you're not thinking about any particular device, you're thinking about a whole range of them.
Yeah, that's so much better way of putting it. Yeah, well done.
But
let me try. No,
do it, Dave.
It means iPhone design.
Yeah,
yeah, it's making things fit on smaller screens. That's the thing. No,
Right, so much more to it than that. Let's. And we were just joking around with that, of course, folks. But do know that that's not what it is, right? It's not.
Yeah. So there were a ton of examples out there for like really great responsive designs, and Chris CSS Stress is a really great one. Dave has actually built and designed more responsive sites than I have at this point. I've got an RWD Twitter account where I talk about, you know, various redesigns that I find and stuff. But there are a lot of these sort of like flexible responsive sites out there that are, you know, pretty easy to find too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have the rest of the kind of the questions for this episode are about this, and they're about more specific aspects of it. And this next one is kind of the anti question, I guess, or something. Let's hear it from Andy Howells.
Okay, here we go.
Hi, my name's Andy from the UK. I wanted to get in touch and just ask a question with regard to responsive web design. I try and do it all on my customer's site, and say about 90% of the designs that I do are based on responsive templates. So I use 114 APX Grid a lot of the time as a jump-off point. One query I had was when I shouldn't be doing responsive web design. For example, I know that there's some talk about certain product heavy websites, so say it's like a retail shop or something like that, where there's hundreds and hundreds of images and hundreds of different products, that potentially it would be better to be looking at a mobile only website, so effectively redirecting to a mobile subdomain, for example. And I just didn't know if there were any tricks that would potentially be able to use to still have a responsive design, but also to take into account the fact that mobile browsers might have slower connections and therefore you don't want to serve them too many images. And just some advice around that would be fantastic. Cheers.
Well, yeah. So what to do? Yeah, this is kind of a very common question. Ethan, do you have any input there?
Well, yeah, that's... there's a lot of great stuff there. I mean, I don't know as I necessarily have like the one answer, but usually when I'm talking to clients, it's like a responsive approach isn't something I'll advise if they've got like a really established like desktop site or, you know, a tablet specific site. You know, if they've got like sort of an infrastructure in place where they're maintaining products, you know, sort of throwing everything out and going for one like sort of like cross platform device agnostic approach might not necessarily be the best approach. So maybe looking at starting small. So maybe having that sort of mobile specific site and then, you know, building it responsively with an eye toward thinking for the future, like designing across different platforms at some point when you can, I guess, tackle those bigger problems of what to do with some of those existing things. Because I don't think it's necessarily about like that you can't do a responsive retrofit on top of a desktop site. I mean, I think you can, but it's always going to be best if you've got that ability to sort of simplify things. It's not just about sort of cramming everything down into the smallest scale, but it's about like taking that more mobile first approach, thinking about, okay, well, you know, what information is actually valuable to all of my readers kind of across the board. So if you don't have that opportunity, then yeah, maybe a separate device specific site is the best way. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm interested. I think the generic concern is, well, it's an e-commerce site. There's 24 pictures of products on every page of the site.
Right.
That's just too much. You know, that's too many resources. The weight of the page is too high. And so somebody might be saying, well, you know, one responsive web design technique is maybe just, you know, hide some of that stuff or smaller
images. Right. Yeah, that may not. That's, I don't know, maybe not a great solution because, you know, just display nunning stuff isn't a true false solution.
I'm interested that you were like, yeah, just, you know, make a mobile specific site. One of the things that attracts me to responsive web design is not having to like fork a code base, you know. I kind of, but you know,
oh, totally. No, totally. I'm completely with you, but I think like, you know, I've talked to companies where it's like, we're going to build a device specific, making that our foundation going forward. You know, so maybe Brad Frost wrote an article about this, about like, I can't remember, it was something like, you know, planting the seed of responsive design on the mobile site in the hopes that that is the, you know, that eventually becomes the actual true responsive experience. So you might not necessarily have the budget to sort of say, okay, well, we have these, like, these three different products, these, you know, like a tablet site, a mobile site, a desktop site, or whatever. Maybe we could start small, really invest in a responsive product that only our mobile customers are going to see for now, but ultimately, you know, that'll be the platform going forward.
Very nice.
So, I think it's really about, like, just picking whatever, like, I guess transitional path kind of makes the most sense for the client. Because yeah, I mean, if you've got that e-commerce site with 24 products per page, and you're sort of locked into that, you know, maybe a responsive approach isn't the best way, especially if, yeah, hiding isn't the best approach.
Right. So, you know, to answer, you know, so for Andy out there, I hope you digested all that. That's pretty good answers, I think. I had one ready to go. But there's not, you know, the root of his question is, when shouldn't you do responsive design? And I'm not sure there's a, you know, it's not something like, oh, I sell replacement parts for accordions. Oh, no, that is not a good candidate for it. It's not the style of site. It's more like what your company is than it is what the, I don't know.
I hear a lot of people who are making, you know, like dashboard sites or something like that, and or, you know, big kind of applications, and they're saying, oh, it's too hard to do in this context. And while I agree with them, and my instinct is like, yeah, just make a mobile site or an MDOT or whatever. That's slang for mobile site, MDOT. Just make a mobile site. But then I sort of, my brain is like, I hate it when I go to mobile sites. I hate it when I go to mobile.techcrunch. It's a piece of garbage. So it's like, maybe try it. I mean, if you're doing something complicated, like a calendaring app or something like that, yeah, maybe it doesn't work, but have you tried? I mean, it's just starting. So I think somebody could create something that could do that efficiently on a mobile site.
But it does, sometimes it takes a whole, it takes your mind. This is what I'm trying to say. Spit it out, Chris. as a form builder, right? I'm sure a lot of you guys have used Wufoo. It's an app to build forms. We don't have really a mobile version. I shouldn't say a small screen version of it, whatever. Mm-hmm. Because the context of, you know, there's a lot of dragging and dropping and rearranging and seeing what you can add to what you, to your, the preview of your form. Anyway, it's not that that could never be done on an iPhone. I'm sure that it could, but it's not a thing like, oh, just throw in some media queries or whatever. We're not, that's absolutely not going to work for us. We need to kind of completely rethink how the thing is going to work on mobile. And that, you know, that's where it has nothing to do with responsive web design failing or any crazy crap like that. It's just different. We're going to have to do something different than that.
Yeah.
It's not a media query solution.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that it's kind of interesting because I wonder, like, what, I don't know, let's not necessarily Wufoo, but like Flickr or Twitter, like what their mobile strategy would look like if they were starting now versus, you know, whenever they came on the web, you know, when all we were thinking about was desktop, you know, we didn't have all these other devices. So like, you know, that forking we had to do by default because we have like legacy content, all this legacy UI. And if you don't have that ability to just sort of like think about, okay, well, I've got that calendaring app. How is a mobile user going to interact with this? You know, if that's your starting point, that makes so many other decisions much easier. Could progressively layer on, you know, interaction, you know, make things more complex as screens get wider, or if you move from touch to keyboard. But, you know, if you've got this product is only in one space, it's going to be, it's not a simple matter of just slapping on media queries. It requires a lot of work. So,
right. Like a start over, a fresh kind of thing. Flickr would probably look like Instagram.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, let's move on, guy. We have a techier one from Mike Henderson.
Oh yeah, I got this one. I have it here.
Hello, Chris, Dave, and Ethan. This is Mike from Colorado. I've seen a lot of blog posts about responsive images, videos, and layouts. One of my favorite CSS tricks is image sprites. I've mostly used this with pixel-based layouts, though. What are the techniques for using image sprites in responsive design? Thanks.
Image sprites and responsive web design.
Yeah, and he wasn't the only one. I think I got two that were like an identical question, basically, and about sprites. And what they both didn't say, and you know, so I'm just calling out here. What it was, what's different about it? Like, why can't you use image sprites? What's the what's the problem you're having? Wasn't iterated well, but the fact that you know, multiple people were having this problem. Apparently, there is some kind of problem. Have you? What are you doing? Are you aware of sprites and problematic situations in responsive design?
Yeah, I mean, well, they're not something I use too frequently, but I mean, well, that's not true. But so like David Slate writes at stunbox.com, and he did an adaptive layout, you know, which is basically a couple fixed width layouts that he was sort of toggling through with media queries. It wasn't flexible, so it wasn't properly responsive, I guess. But the reason he kind of did multiple fixed width layouts for his site was because he was using a pretty complex sprite for all of his header assets. So his logo would sort of have this really cool animation state when you moused over it. And same thing with some of his nav items. And, you know, so using a sprite in a completely flexible format wasn't realistic for him at that point, because once you take pixels out of the equation, figuring out where to reposition the image got a little bit more complicated.
So,
I mean, I can't think of any great way to kind of work around that, honestly. I mean, background size doesn't have, I guess, the support I'd like to see.
Yeah, I think IE8 is still failing on that, or maybe that's the first. But that's the thing. Yeah, and then, like you said, though, if you change the background size, then the pixel positioning becomes wrong all of a sudden, right? So you have to either put tons of space between the things in the sprite, or I'm not sure what the solution is there. Can you position with percentages? I guess you could.
You can, but then it gets all this wonky, like you're positioning, like if it's 50%, 50%, you're positioning at the midway point in the graphic on the midway point in the container. So it's like relative to the image coordinates as well as the container. So, I think that's definitely like maybe a weakness in responsive design right now. That's not to say you can't use background images or position fully, but sprites.
Yeah, or sprites, you know, I don't know. So have one, have the ones that there, I'm sure there's some of those sprites that don't need to resize so much.
Right.
You know, if it's a little pencil icon or something that's next to some text, well,
yep,
you know,
totally.
The text probably isn't resizing quite yet. I know. I think we're all a little excited about those like VH and VW units or whatever that can size text based on the width of the viewport. I think in WebKit Nightly those are out now. So that's going to be pretty cool. I mean, you know, like as you stretch a browser window way out, the text can grow with it in kind of a natural CSS way. That'll be pretty cool. But that's not really here yet. So that text size is probably remaining the same, and thus your little pencil icon will be just fine right next to it.
People in the chat room are talking about icon fonts, which we've kind of covered on the show, but just being a way to get around some of those little dingbat sprite items you might have.
Totally. And that's not a sprite, and it's just text. And so you can resize those a lot easier. I'm all about icon fonts. I think they're splendid. But that may not solve the, you know, particular sprite issues of like a logo or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, one day we'll have it all figured out. Somebody in the somebody listening to this needs to just write a plugin for jQuery or something.
Gosh.
Figure it out.
Plugin,
make a plugin. Awesome.
Part of the fun of being a web developer right now, right, is living through all these kind of these problems come up, and then they get cool solutions, and we implement them, and then sometimes those solutions make it into the spec. Fun. All right, we have a sponsor this week. We have them for four total episodes, and this is week 204. Hover.com, which is a place to buy domain names. And they're, you know, it's nice. It's a nice experience to go to Hover and buy a domain name. And they have four like pillars of things they believe in and they try to do. So I was just like, well, there's four of them and they're sponsoring 4 weeks. Let me just talk about number two of four. And that is minimal cross selling. So when you go buy a domain from Hover, they're not trying to hit you from all sides with different stuff you should buy, like hosting and super protection and do you want a shoulder rub or whatever they try to sell you on the other one. So you just when you have a task to do on Hover, they just design the experience of doing that task, whether it's buying a domain name or changing name servers or transferring it to them or whatever else. So if you go to hover.com/shoptalk, you get 10% off whatever you buy from there. So check it out. Thanks for sponsoring the show, Hover. And then that book, this is the third week we've talked about that. And the last week, it's called the HTML and CSS book. Have you seen it, Ethan? It's super nice.
No, I haven't. Oh, that really is a designed one, right? No, maybe I'm thinking of something else.
The URL is htmlncssbook.com. It's from Wiley, and it's just this like really. I finally got a copy of it. It's really incredibly well designed and written book on just learning the basics of HTML and CSS. I think it's going to be my go-to email response when people ask me what book to buy for a beginner, because it's really nice. And so we're going to give away copies of the book. This is the last winner, and all you had to do to win was to send us in an audio question. We have the winner is Geert de Decker.
Oh, you nailed it!
That was awesome.
Timing is everything.
Congratulations, Geert. I don't think we have a question of yours, but we will, of course, get to it at some point. So congratulations on winning the book. More Q&A.
Moving along. Here we go. This one's from Derek Domko. He said, he's asking, I would like to know ideas or comments on scaling images with responsive design. Maybe pros and cons of image scaling in responsive design.
Oh, my gosh. This is my failure as a show organizer. That's basically the same one we just did.
It's more or less, but this is more like just for images. Like,
yeah. Okay. And there's a lot of stuff here, right? I mean, pros and cons. Well, I guess like really inside baseball stuff. I mean, so resizing images flexibly, you need to remove your width and height attributes in your CSS. That'll make things a lot easier. There can be some penalties with that from a redraw standpoint, some performance related things in terms of how they're rendered into the page. This sort of exceeds by now, that particular issue, but that is something to be aware of. It can be problematic.
That's interesting. So you're saying like you target image, like the image element in CSS, and you would say width is auto important maybe or something to make sure that you override inline styles on that image, and width is auto important, maybe not important. Let's not get into that. But you're just resetting the width and the height of those images to auto instead of their default. And we've been long told that having inline width and height values on images is good for layout because the browser knows what kind of space to reserve for them.
And the only challenge I've found that is, you know, some browsers and devices just aren't great with the width auto, height auto values. So I usually just strip them out of the HTML, which again is not, like you said, ideal. that'd be problematic, I guess. Some of the guys from Opera have been, you know, sort of mentioning that. I think sort of the larger question with responsive images is, that somebody mentioned, Andy mentioned in his question earlier about, you know, the mobile screens have less bandwidth question, you know, which is, that's a really fuzzy correlation to make. We can't make a straight line between the width of the screen and the amount of bandwidth that it has available to it.
Right.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, we want to be, I guess, like mindful of how large the images are that we're serving out to our readers and our visitors. So their response image delivery thing, and one of the first was came out of the Boston Globe project that I worked on last year, where, you know, if your screen's above a certain resolution threshold, you get progressively enhanced up to a wider image. If you're below that resolution threshold, or if you don't have JavaScript, you just get that small screen appropriate image.
Which is sweet, right? Yeah. It's work.
Well, it did until browsers decided to break it a little bit. Matt Marquis, who worked on the project, wrote this sort of for List Apart a couple weeks ago, or end of January, where he was talking about this issue where, I guess, images or browsers changed. They introduced the notion of image prefetching, which screwed up the timing on the script executing.
Mm-hmm.
So occasionally two requests would go out versus the one that we sort of had working before. So ideally, every browser or device would only get one image request that goes out. But certain desktop browsers occasionally will basically request both images, which isn't ideal. So
I mean, if you had to pick, it'd be better to have the worst option go to the desktop, right? Kind of, sort of, right? Too bad we can't run media queries based on bandwidth, right? You know, like at media bandwidth equals fast.
I know, seriously. The script and kind of a bunch of other techniques that followed it are based on that, like that sort of fuzzy assumption. We don't have proper bandwidth detection. That's kind of our blind spot. Right. So Matt has actually been working with, he's sort of chairing this community group over the W3C to kind of introduce a new spec for a picture element. You know, to allow us to actually write media queries to serve up different image sources, depending on, let's say, the width of the screen for now until we actually get an area or whatever. So, kind of like working
you're
the
video. You're saying that's cool, but it's still based on that same fuzzy assumption, right?
Yeah.
So, at least it's something.
Something, hopefully. So, right now, it's kind of up in the air, but
some Apple dude put a proposal out on the old mailing list the other day, and I don't know if it was picture. I think it might have been something else. I might be wrong. There's people thinking about this, but beyond thinking about it, it's starting to get closer to like literally being spec'd. So it's going to happen, people. Yeah,
nice. Things are afoot.
Big time. Yeah, and this is a big one. We don't want to, you know, we want to search browser one image, not multiple. We don't want to use JavaScript to flip it all around. We want to, just serve the proper one to the proper place. That's all we're trying to do here. Come on, help us out, technology.
We're not asking the world. Come on.
I just need a robot to deliver this image to the right person.
Yeah,
in the right context.
Why can't you, browser? Stupid.
God.
Let's do the next one about the ads. Let's do this third question in a row that's tangentially related to the last two.
Okay, this is from Daniel Davidson. Let me make sure I have the right one here.
Hi, Chris and Dave. Great podcast. My name's Daniel, and just got a quick question about responsive design. A lot of the sites I'm doing these days use responsive design. I think it's a really good technique. However, if the site needs adverts, I have to rule it out because at the moment you're not allowed following the terms from Google, you're not allowed to resize or hide adverts. And unless I use really messy browser sniffing, I just can't get around it. I just wonder if you've got any experience of this or any solution that maybe works a bit better. Thank you.
Classic, right?
Yeah. Ads are tough.
Ads are awesome, guys.
Yeah, I agree. You keep buying ads on my things, I think.
Okay. Seriously, but yeah, they're tricky in a responsive framework. I mean, Dave, you said they're tough. You've been working on anything?
Well, we just we worked on a Twitter site for their Super Bowl promotion with Chevy, and there were ads there, and we did some responsive, and then some were just images, and you know, but when we were looking at the kind of original ad comps, we were very concerned with how small things were going to get once that like JPEG squeezed down. But you guys did a really good job with ads on the Boston Globe. That's one thing I noticed.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was actually kind of fun to work on. I mean, I don't know. I spent a little too much time looking at ad server code than I would have liked, maybe. But so they were kind of we were trying to kind of figure out how they would work in the layout, obviously, but like the big design requirement we got was to make sure that the ads would kind of stay as high promoted as possible within the layout, depending on where it was being viewed. So we came up with a solution. So like if you're on the homepage, there's that square ad that might appear right underneath the lead story if you're on a very small screen. Once a second column appears, it gets promoted up to the top of that second column. And then when you're on like a wider screen and the three columns appear, it gets pushed up to the top right. So that was actually fairly easy to set up with some like just some really simple markup and some media queries and a little light JavaScript so that we could kind of toggle the visibility of any particular ad block. And then every time there's a resize event, we could move the ad into into the next visible spot. Nice. So that was cool. But from a standpoint, I mean, the ads are fixed width. We had to kind of wrap them in iframes because some of the JavaScript that was getting injected into the pages was, you know, written in the administration and would do things like blank out the page. So we kind of had buy-in from the Globe that at sort of like our major breakpoints, we'd kind of preserve the integrity of the ad. We wouldn't, you know, clip it. We wouldn't, you know, introduce any weirdness like resizing it. But at, you know, sort of the in between points, everyone was sort of comfortable treating them as edge cases. So that made things a lot easier for us. But layout feels like the easy problem to solve for me because right now, I mean, ad networks are very much like a one size fits all kind of delivery, you know. So an ad tag gets into a page, it's going to drop that like a particular ad in regardless of whether or not the device actually has flash or whether or not it can actually, I don't know, then work in a responsive layout. It's, you know, it just takes a little work.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I think we're talking about Daniel Davidson's question here. He was using Google, right, which is like this, right, some JavaScript you chuck on your page or whatever, and they're saying you don't have a very good one-to-one relationship with your advertiser and your website with Google. You'll probably never ever talk to them. And they say in the rules of Google that you can't forcibly resize. I mean, they paid for these pixels, they're going to get these pixels or whatever. If you do have a one-to-one relationship and it's not through Google, kind of like I do on my side, I sell pretty much directly, I can just say, hey, I'm going to resize your ad a little bit. Or to be completely honest, I don't even ask. I just do it, and nobody's ever had a problem with it. So in the same way that you can resize an image that in your blog post, for, you know, it's 800 pixels or something, but if you squeeze it down because it's in a fluid column and it turns out to be 600 pixels, big deal. You do it for an ad, too, and you just got to use your best judgment to know, you know, I don't know, if you squish a 125 by 125 pixel ad down to 50 by 50, that's not cool anymore. They're not kind of getting what they paid for them, but maybe you can shuffle them around a little bit. There's a thing where CSS regions, that thing that Adobe did, where you can say, like, I want this thing to be here and this thing to be here, and they're like connected text flows between them, is going to be pretty cool in response to design, I think. Because, like, well, I don't know, that Ethan was talking about with the... you know how there's this big on the Boston Globe. There's this big ad on the upper right, and then it shifts down like below the header later. That's a thing that will be cool with what CSS regions, I think, because you can just be like literally just move it, no JavaScript required. Anyway, I'm rambling now. What do you think? Ads stuff.
Love them. Oh, that's cool. I never actually thought about CSS regions before. That's actually a really cool approach.
There may be some issues with unneeded markup. Like you might have to chuck an empty div in there because that div is going to be a region and that has nothing in it right now, but might later. That kind of stuff.
That's cool.
Didn't you? Isn't one of the ads on the Boston Globe site right now actually cut off a little bit? Is that?
Shouldn't be. I mean, that, yeah. I'd have to check that out. It should be cut off there. I will get back to you on that, sir.
No problem. Oh, no, it's not. It's not. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe you just ask advertisers to design a little bit too wide, knowing that mostly it's going to show this wide, but it might also crop the sides a little bit. But not the case. I'm just making stuff up, guys.
Next question.
The next question, we're going to move from images here and ads into tables. Are you ready for this? This one's from Pat E. Hawaii, which I'm not sure if this is a typo or that's his real name.
It's totally a real name. E. Hawaii?
If his last name is E. Hawaii, that is awesome. So anyway,
last names, yeah.
What do you guys think of the idea of making the jQuery plugin data tables, which is at datatables.net, responsive? So it's basically like a table that you has headers and you can sort by each column, you know, click, 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 and it'll resort every column, just like Excel or something like that. In my experience with responsive tables, that would be most difficult.
In my experience with very few responsive tables, I would agree.
Yeah, it's a good idea. So I put this in here because I was like, Pat, I love it. Of course, this thing should be responsivized. That would be great. It would just make it better. It would take an already nice thing and make it even better. But there are, you know, I had a post one time where I rounded up all the different solutions for responsive tables. There's a lot. It really, really depends on the data in that table. You can't just say, oh, it's tabular data. Here's the responsive solution, much like all of responsive design. You know, you kind of have to look at what you got and make some decisions around what you got here. So I just don't know. I don't know. Can it be done? Especially with the sorting and stuff? I don't know.
No, I'm with you. I mean, it'd be interesting to sort of see, like, just what this plugin would actually feel like on a small screen anyway. You know, would I want to sort all this stuff or, you know, have to page through this stuff manually? Yeah, I don't know. I think it would be tough from a technical standpoint, from a design standpoint. Maybe you don't necessarily want that sorting on certain interfaces, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so some of the solutions are pretty cool. Filament Group had a really cool one where you kind of mark columns as either totally vital or medium vital or not vital or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So when you're on a smaller screen, the column, if it's a lower priority, may actually literally just get hidden. But then it's never just hidden forever. There's this little like drop down thing you can click and then choose to turn it back on. And if you've chosen to turn it back on, that table then might expand wider than the device's width, which I have to do a little horizontal scrolling, but at least it's not hidden forever, and at least it's not busting out by default. I don't know. It was a pretty good solution. There's other ones that just totally reformat the table to not be very particularly table-like, but at least they never break the maximum width, which is kind of nice. Maybe if Pat is like thinking about putting the work in to redo this table, maybe the solution would be to look at all the different solutions there, and I'll put a link to my roundup in there. I think I have pretty much all the current ones linked to from that post. And then how jQuery plugins are. They have key value pairs, which are options you pass to the plugin. Maybe each different one could be a different option. Like, you know, make this responsive, but use the schnoodle technique or whatever.
Nice.
I don't know. It's a good app, maybe too difficult to do on an automatic basis. Let's do a little sponsor stuff. The fellas from Less Comp, from Less Accounting, Stephen Allen, super nice guy. They're doing a conference in Tampa, Florida. I used to live there. It's a nice place. On June 7th, coming up this year, they're calling it Less Month. It's a one-day conference where they discuss how to become more profitable. So if you're a small business and you make money, you want to make more money, go and talk to these guys, listen to speakers. I think they have a few speakers, which should be pretty cool. It's just a conference all about making money. It should be pretty good. These guys started with very little and do a bunch of consulting work and web app work, and now are doing pretty well for themselves. So if you can learn anything, it might be from these guys. Go check it out at lessmoney.lesseverything.com. And then we were talking about that app. We're just doing a giveaway for the app processor. So processor app.com. And it's kind of like, if you need to do some drag and droppy stuff with your CSS on Mac OS X, you can like take a CSS file, drop it in there, reform it, compress it, do all kinds of different auto formatting stuff with this app. Plus, it looks pretty. And we are doing a little Twitter giveaway. I'm going to give two of them to Ross.
whose Twitter handle is RossM901, and Joe Savage. So thanks, guys, for mentioning it. Ooh, I love the soundboard. We don't really. Anyway, congratulations, you two. I'll be in touch and get you a code to download that thing. Okay, let's keep it going. Let's keep it going a few more. You're good. Are you feeling limber, Ethan?
Oh man, ever so. Stretching during the break. I'm good.
Yeah. Barry Walsh. Oh yeah. You do it. This is awesome.
I'll read. Okay, the next question is from Barry Walsh. He's saying, I'm working on my first proper responsive project. What's the best practice to prevent hidden images from loading? They wouldn't be background images. They're images loaded using an image tag through a service like Gravatar or something like that. So I assume he wants them to not load. I mean, hidden images won't load. Is that right? Am I right there?
I don't think that's true, actually, but I don't know.
Oh, because they're prefetching.
Yeah. Well, right. They're in line. I don't know. Tim Cadlec from Breaking DevConf and who else? Jason Grigsby have been doing some asset like tests. I'm pretty sure images will actually still be downloaded, but I'm not sure about that.
Even if you set display none on them?
Yeah, I can't remember. I need to double check on that, but I mean, like my policy is usually like, you know, start my markup from like what the you know, mobile user quote unquote is going to be, and then like if I need to bring in images above that threshold, maybe, you know, that's where things get all JavaScripty or something, like, you know, enhance, right, I guess. As the screen gets wider rather than kind of squelching as things get smaller. That's my usual approach.
Sure, but which yeah, maybe in this case could be thought of as kind of a lazy loading kind of situation. He mentioned Gravatar, which is a big deal, right? Because if you have a blog post on WordPress, like I do, and there's 100 comments on that post, that's 100 image requests to Gravatar, each one individually. They don't sprite those things up for you. Every one of those things. And that's serious on a mobile device, 100 Gravatars? Oh my gosh. And it's just kind of the way it is. But if you just didn't have them in your markup at all, they just weren't there, and then you decided, hey, you know, JavaScript, test the screen. Is the screen 800 or more pixels wide or something like that? Then, and, you know, I don't know, figure it out somehow. Maybe you could have a data attribute that linked to the where that Gravatar image lives. Grab that data attribute, chuck an image tag, drop it on the image. That's, you know, it's only putting that stuff in there. For wider screens. I'm just stealing that from Ethan. That's pretty good.
As always, you said it with pretty words. So that's that sounds good.
Okay. Well, so
but this is the good time. I wonder if people. We should do some follow up on this stuff because this is pretty interesting. I think people would want to know if. I think if you display none something and it has a background image, the background isn't loaded, but if an image, I'm not even sure about that, but I'm pretty sure. But what about
the image tag.
Inline images, the image tag? If you display none, that I don't know the answer to that. We'll do follow up on that.
Yeah, background images, you should be good. If the element itself doesn't have, I mean, it's always best to kind of zero out the background image property. That's kind of the most bulletproof approach. But inline images, I'm not sure about my. I'm pretty sure it's still downloaded. I need to double check.
Yeah. Follow so up. With this Gravatar thing, though, one way you could do it was it would be to set inline styles that loads it as a background image. That'd be another way to go, kind of, sort of, because then you could display none them and not worry about the. Maybe. Just riffing here.
Yeah. Where's that robot, Dave?
Yeah.
Robot, make it.
Wesley Terry has to ask, I am having a small issue with responsive design and embedded tweets. So if you guys seen that, you know, you can go on twitter.com and hit the little embed thing and it gives you some JavaScript and it gives you the tweet in a nice block quote. It's all semantic. Plus it looks great. I don't know. They're pretty cool. That's what Wesley's talking about here. I keep trying to get a class added to the div and it's giving me issues. I'm basically adding these to the sidebar of a project using initializer. And the iPad view, it is creeping over to the right. Min and max width from Twitter seem to be the problem. Here's a thing to show you the problem. I am just trying to do something that won't work. If so,
Well, yes, dummy. Stop trying. I'm not going to say that to you, Wesley Terry. You're not a dummy.
But I don't know. Unfortunately, the JS fiddle that you sent over didn't illustrate the problem to me perfectly. Have you guys seen these things? The embedded tweets?
Yeah, it's the embedded tweets from Twitter, like, gives it like a Twitter feel, like, automatically. They're pretty awesome, and they should squeeze down just fine, but they have a width of 500 pixels, kind of
a max. They're like width.
Max.
Yeah.
And sort of I think his question, and I hope I'm right here, that he can't override it. And the width, and I think you can do it doing important, like targeting the wrapper div, or you can't do it because it's in an iframe from their server, sort of thing. But gosh, yeah. I think they just inject styles, so I think you can use important to
it's not an iframe
override it.
So you're okay there. And they're trying to add a class to the div. That would be tricky because then you'd have to like wait for window onload and then up, and then this isn't part of the DOM ready thing. You'd have to target it with JavaScript to add a class. I don't know. They do have a min and max width though, so they're just trying to say I don't know. They're naturally responsive. I don't know. Almost. I mean, they do have a max width, which makes sense in the context of a tweet because you don't want a tweet that's 1,000 pixels wide. It will just look and read weird. I don't know. We shouldn't have put this one in here because I'm not 100% sure what the question is anymore. If you want to, though, because it's not an iframe, you can target this stuff with really serious CSS rules. You know, you might have to use a lot of important because. Use important because they kind of don't want you to mess around with with what these look like. But if you have a really good reason and really want to, you could load your CSS, make sure it's loaded after this tweet, and put important on a ton of stuff. Oh, that's gross. I don't want to recommend that.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. All right. Next.
Hello.
Next question. Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Hello from Brighton, UK. What
was that? I think you should try an accent on this one.
Hello, what are you doing? No. Just a quick question, guys. Do you have any thoughts on how to create a masonry style layout like Pinterest.com? I've been looking at the woodmark.com/bakery plugin, but it doesn't work great on the iPhone, and I need a mobile-friendly, responsive layout. It would be great to hear your thoughts there. So I want to just follow up so people understand this question in full. When he says masonry style layout, I'm pretty sure he's referring to, well, you can just go to Pinterest and see it. But David DeSandro has this cool called masonry, and it takes blocks that are of different heights, and it kind of like a brick wall kind of sticks them all together where they're going to fit the most appropriate way. So instead, you know, if you'd had a bunch of blocks and they were different heights and you just floated left on all of them, they would like get caught on each other and they wouldn't fill up the space nicely. And that's what this masonry layout does, is it kind of slides things up and down so they fit all kind of nicely. And that can work in a responsive layout, I think, because it's especially if those little blocks are of fluid width, and you kind of use some media queries to say how many of the columns there are. And apparently there's another plugin that does great on iPhone. And I wanted to mention, well, I'll bring this, I'll ask the guys some stuff too, but I have an idea for you, David. And the idea is based on this cool post I saw. I think it was on sickdesigner.com. Sickdesigner.com. I think the whole layout of the site uses a masonry style layout, but it doesn't use any JavaScript at all. I don't know if you guys. Yeah, I was correct. So if any of you guys go to sickdesigner.com, you can see this. There are blocks and they're of different height, but they all kind of line up nicely spaced, even though they're kind of staggered like a brick wall. And the way that he's doing that there, this is Radu. Is each one of those blocks is display inline block, and then there's stuff within that, and then the large container has CSS3 columns on it, so it just, you know, there's a block and it just has multiple text columns and it drops it in here, so no JavaScript required kind of stuff. That will definitely work on the iPhone and it's worth checking out. So
All right. That was a lot of me talking. You guys have any thoughts? Pinterest?
No. You just blew my mind, sir. That was I love that. I'm going to have to try that out. I mean, without having looked at this plugin, I would imagine that it would probably be fine if you're thinking about a mobile-friendly layout. You know, I wonder how well a masonry-style layout would actually work on smaller screens anyway. So maybe you could get away with just, you know, only including the plugin above a certain resolution range or something.
Indeed.
You know, so linear by default, but then above, I don't know, however wide your columns are times two, let's say. Sure. You know, go to town with the masonry.
Sure. So one way you might approach that is Modernizer has media query tests, and you could say mm-hmm. Modernizer do this test, and then Modernizer.load, which is a thing called Yep, Nope, which is pretty cool. It's a script loader. Conditionally then load that JavaScript file only on screens that match a certain media query. That would be some advice for you, Wesley. Hopefully that was useful. We're 11:01. We're late. Do we want to do one more?
Let's do one more. We're going over time here, and then we'll all go back to looking at Apple products and throwing our credit cards at Apple. The last question is from Aaron Fisher. With responsive web design being a hot topic of discussion among our industry, do you have a suggestion on where to start in terms of frameworks? In the past, I've used 960JS and HTML5 boilerplate for traditional development, but have yet to take a real dive into responsive. There seems to be a dozen fluid grid responsive frameworks. Is there one out there that may be more inclusive and have more of an industry backing in support?
Grids.
Well,
responsive.
Ethan, you're not a huge fan of responsive grids, is that right? Or you just don't use them?
Frameworks. I'm not a big framework person in general, but that's just, you know, my, you know, biases and stuff. There are some really fantastic ones out there. Foundation from Zurb is pretty good. I know Twitter Bootstrap just launched 2.0, and they've got like an optional flexible responsive grids module that you can snap in. For me, I usually just do I try to do a custom grid whenever possible anyway. Just kind of feel like the grid needs to be tailored to the design rather than kind of like a kind of an off the shelf thing. But I know you guys said you've had a lot of luck with what's it, Gridly? Is that what it was called?
We made one called Foldy, and basically it's like a simplified 960, and it's like I have a 3-column version and a 6-column version, and it's actually just like one media query to make it all work. It's really weird, but it's sort of a starter kit to, if you want to add more complexity, if you want, you know, stuff to get, you know, more complex at certain things, you can certainly do that. But I'm working on repackaging that, and now it's like mobile first on the last 2 or 3 projects I've done. So I think that'll be out soon, but you can go find it on my GitHub. It's Foldy 960. So
I haven't seen if that. I want to see that.
Check it out.
I haven't seen it either. Awesome.
It's kind of our quiet, you know, baby plugin. It's just sort of a good starter. We don't want to be like, hey, this is the framework grid to rule all frameworks, because it's not that at all. It's just like, hey, here's probably where you want to start, you know, like, and then figure it out. So it's got, awesome. You know, it uses the grid underscore syntax, which is, you know, it's inefficient, because when you have like a grid one is the same size as a grid six at some point, you know, which you will, it's, you know, that's where language is starting to fail us. You
it's
know,
only inefficient because it's not grid dash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I guess So
that's good.
If there was another word for like a morphing grid unit, then I would use it, but there's really not.
And so Aaron Fisher, sorry, Chris, go for it.
No, I'm going to wrap up, so you better.
All right.
Better.
I was just going to plus one what Dave was saying about language. So please, kindly sing us home, sir.
I just wanted to say, Aaron Fisher, thanks for the question about that. There's some people in the chat room saying the golden grid system is pretty cool. It literally, it's kind of like it folds in upon itself, the different grids. That's check out. And then like four or five people said HTML5 boilerplate, which I have no idea what you're talking about. Is there a fluid grid in the boilerplate now? That would be news to me. Let's just let me sound ignorant about that, and we'll do follow-up about it next week.
I think that's all I got. Oh, and don't be afraid of calculating your own grids. I saw a tweet from some fancy dude saying beep earlier on the Twitter, and it was a little movie, and I watched it, and it showed about TextMate and how it can do math in it, and I was like, oh, that's awesome.
TextMate is the only reason I have a job.
Yeah. You can like literally write little math problems in there. So don't be afraid of calculating your own grids. Okay, that's about it.
Also, sorry to interrupt, but Mark Bolton is working on some fancy grid thing. So
he is indeed.
It's mysterious. I haven't seen it. But anyway, that could be a thing too in the future. Heads up. Yeah. I'm done, Chris. Hey, Ethan, how could people give you money?
What? Well, they could just PayPal my Twitter account. What? No, just
perfect.
On the Twitter.
You also run at web design, RWD.
right. At RWD. Yeah, and I'm EthanMarcotte.com. And I have a book, at A Book Apart.
There you go. That give him your monies. He's well worth it. Thanks for coming on the show so much, and thanks everyone for listening and downloading. Go ahead and rate this show in iTunes while you're listening, please. We'd love it. Chris, you want to take us out for real this time?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was way premature about that last time. ShopTalkShow.com.